Yo, welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Train podcast series. I bet y'all like, hey, that ain't the other man that be with the bald head, man. Yeah, I know. Patrick ain't here today, but I'm going to get into that. But welcome to the Freedom Train podcast series. I am Joseph Ward, the host of the Freedom Train podcast series. Joined with me today is Professor Carl Tone Jones in replace of Patrick Irvin for today. Look, Patrick had to go down to his local flea market to try on condoms. He can't make it here today. So he's doing this little condom try on. Then after that, I don't know what else he got going on, but he couldn't make it today. But now I'm just playing. Pat had a, you know, we got other things going on. Got to take care of his health. And so, Professor, joining me today, man. What's up, PC?
What's going on, good brother?
Man, everything is everything.
Got to go down there. We got to make sure that Pat ain't getting bootleg or used condoms.
You know? Exactly. Keep telling me, man, you got to get the best latex possible, though. You can't just don't get no holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man. Everything good up there in Philly?
Man, Philly is kind of like, I don't know, man. Philly's wild, man. it's hard to, you know, one day it's hot, one day it's cold. But for the most part, man, what we're seeing right now is the second part of this whole pandemic that we don't really talk about. So, you know, a lot of things we talk about with the health, but in two different trips to the store, you know, one to a supermarket and one to a department store, you know, there were brothers out there, you know, pretty much asking for help to feed their families.
And yeah.
Like homeless brothers, these were brothers who recently lost their jobs. You know, and now they're stuck waiting for unemployment to kick in. They're stuck and doing, you know, so it's pretty rough, bro. Pretty rough.
Yeah.
And this is just, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I'm gonna dive into that because I got a question, but I'm gonna do this first. So make sure that we shout out PAX Inc. So that's our sponsor, PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, how you can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved in the different programs they have, like a literacy program, a sports program, as well as community surveys. They have a learning center tab that you hover your mouse over, and you have audio resources, political resources, books, survival resources, legal cases, and videos, all that available, as well as you can support them through their online store, as well as the Amazon Smile program, which basically you shop on Amazon like you normally do, but you would register under the Amazon Smile program. You just Google Amazon Smile. And when you register on the Amazon Smile program, you get to shop on Amazon like you regularly do, but a portion of your proceeds go to a nonprofit of your choice. So go choose PACTSINC and make that the nonprofit of your choice. So every time you go on Amazon and you buy something, bam. You're going to help PAX Inc. out. So that's how you do it. So I want to make sure we give that shout out to PAX Inc. Make sure y'all visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We got a lot of content on the channel. We make sure we're growing the channel. So make sure y'all subscribe to the channel, like, comment, share. We need all of that. Get that algorithm going, because the only way to make sure that our content is getting shown, is getting viewed, is to make sure that we're commenting, make sure that we're sharing these videos, make sure that we're liking these videos. So like, comment, share, subscribe. And when you subscribe, hit that notification bell, because we dropping videos all the time. So every time we drop a video, bam, you get that notification bell. And we out you. We all the way out you. So make sure y'all check us out, man. www.freedomtrainradio.com. So PC, so Do you all have a number of food banks in Philly?
Yeah, we do. Actually, the irony about the food banks, the majority of the food banks are sponsored by the Archdiocese. So, you know, they pretty much, if it wasn't for, you know, the Catholic Church, yeah, we'd be in a lot of trouble here. A lot of people And that's what happened last year. That's pretty much who was sponsoring the majority of the food banks here in Philadelphia. Either that or they were coming strictly, they were coming right out of a warehouse in Washington, D.C. But yeah, we do have food banks and we have food services. We have the Philadelphia Peace Park Association, and they provide a lot of food drives. And we have some others, but the Philadelphia Peace Park is the one I'm most affiliated with, along with West Philly Produce. My good brother Arnett Woodall also does food box deliveries and preparation for families.
Okay. Now, I was asking, because I know like here, that's interesting because you say the archdiocese. And I had to wrap my mind, oh yeah, them Catholic church people. We don't do that in the South. So, but a lot of churches do head a lot of the food giveaways or the food drives, but I know we got organizations like Farm Share and Second Harvest who made themselves available for different organizations to be able to come get fresh produce and like non-perishable food, frozen meat and stuff like that. So
philanthropist organization, philanthropist, excuse me, outreaches, the Salvation Army does that. But, you know, for the most part, I only mention the ones that, you know, that Black people run because I trust them more. It's not that right. I don't the other ones, but I trust the ones, you know, when we start talking about looking out for our community and so forth. I'm always wary of financial benefactors that are not from where we're from. So
right. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. All right. So today's show, man, we got to talk politics. We got to talk a little politics because everything
something happened?
Man, you know, we had the changing of the guards. We had the inauguration last week. We want to get into this inauguration. You know, Black people. I love Black people, man. But Black people, wow. So we're going to get into that. Also, Joe Biden has already signed at least, well, he's already published 17 executive orders. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to have time to get into all 17, but we can kind of give an overview of the executive order. Some of them, I have a list of executive orders, so we can get into some of the information about some of them. But this is what we want to get into today, man. We got to make sure that we stay current, stay relevant with what's going on, but just kind of, you know, put our little piece in the game. Let right. people know what's going on. Let us shine and stuff. Because this inauguration, man. So did you get a chance to watch it?
No, I actually slept through the inauguration, to be honest with you. And it was one of the best days of sleep I had in 2021.
Be like that.
I wasn't too much aware of the inauguration, but I did wake up to see a lot of people were truly impressed with coats and a particularly old white man sitting in a chair with gloves on. So,
hey, yeah. Yeah, they dragging burning ass.
Yeah. You know, so they made a copy, JPEG that people could actually post it. So people were actually making their own memes with it. So, you know, I got to see that part of it. But in all seriousness, you know, what I really got to see was pretty much the Black people back off and sort of get real comfortable with politics again.
Yeah, we saw that. It was, and to be expected, the fashion and the frivolous stuff was at the forefront of what Black people was talking about. Not the actual real politics. Like, you know, we voted like somebody in for president, it's a changing of the guard. So that means a whole lot of changes and political things are going to happen. But, you know, with us, it was fashion. I mean, y'all, I ain't gonna lie, Michelle Obama looked good. But, right. But I mean,
she's a beautiful woman. She dresses, she's very chic. You know, I mean,
she got money. Why she supposed to be able to dress good? But it's like that shouldn't be at the forefront of what we care about when it comes to politics. Like every time Barack and Michelle walk out, like Barack did more than just be a Black dude in the White House who just so happened to dress better than the white boys who was in there. Like, that can't be the one thing that we concentrate on and care about more than, hey, what actually happened at the inauguration? I didn't have a chance. I worked all day, so I didn't have a chance to watch it. But, like, what happened in the inauguration? What's the fallout from the inauguration? And what political ramifications are we going to be dealing with? Or what's the political role moving forward? Because, all right, we got Biden and Harris in there. So, like, what's next?
Well, I think we're going to shift back. People are going to get comfortable with the same type of relationship that Black people have with politics that we did prior to the Trump administration, when you had 8 years of Barack Obama, and the issues for the Black community were met with benign neglect. I think we're going to get real comfortable with that. I mean, people went from this whole campaign about voting as if your life depended on it to, well, he's in office, but really, we're not really expecting much from him. And that was pretty much the general feel I got from using social media and asking people who were very, very vocal about their support, who were very excited about the changing of the guard, as you said. They mostly were concerned about the fact that now they no longer have to worry about overt racism. Now we can go back to covert.
It's like, okay, I thought the goal was to end racism, period. Mm-hmm. Because the goal can't be, well, I want to go back to the racism that feel better. Like, mm-hmm. I thought the goal was to end it, period. Like, what's the overall goal? To just find a comfortable place, or find, all right, this, the old racism hit us 12 times, this one only hit us 6 times. Like, you're still getting hit. Mm-hmm. You're still under the system of white supremacy. So we should be concentrating on ending that.
Well, as Black people, we should be concentrating on building our own power, which a lot of people alluded to, but there really was no specifics around it. Mostly what we look at in terms of specifically I guess there was a Zoom conference that was released right after the election, where Biden had a conversation with the Black members of his staff. And that wasn't too promising in regards to some of the things that were said. Now, you know, because we didn't have an official tape, we can only say what was allegedly said.
So what was allegedly said?
Allegedly told Black people, we're not going to have these conversations about, you know, what Black people need at this time. We have to more so focus on the other needs of the country. And he really made a strong push to speak to the fact that this country is going to be Spanish speaking and overrun with Latin population over the next few years. So people better get comfortable with appeasing and appealing to the Latin community. Now, ordinarily, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but when you start looking at some of the policies in years past and things of that nature, politically speaking, we can't really speak to a policy that specifically speaks to improving conditions for Black people in this country.
There isn't one.
And even in this new election so far, we haven't seen any push towards improving conditions, you know, other than when they talk about prison reform and things of that nature, which I find it very, very, very cute that when you start talking about improving conditions for Black people, we're automatically associated with the criminal element, you know, and the criminal nature.
That shows you where we at.
Yeah, and it shows you the priority in regards to dealing, you know, Black people are more than just police reform. Black people are more than just dealing with housing reform. No, we, you know, Black people have a condition that was created, you know, in the foundation of this country. And this country owes Black people a more of a debt than to just have these carry-on policies. But what I really find is that, and I know we're going to get into it in a little bit as I looked at some of the policies before, Black people will benefit slightly from the things that come forth, but it'd be more so based on what Kamala Harris said in one of her interviews, in which she said she would support legislation that Black people would benefit from, but it wouldn't be strictly for Black people. And I thought, that's really interesting, because I read some of the language in some of these executive orders. Not one iota say anything about Black people, Africans, African Americans, anything of that nature.
Right.
Or the people of color.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you know how that classifies minorities, people of color, or the underserved communities.
Right.
So that's like Black folk and them.
Yeah. And so, but really what it comes down to is the and them get services and Black people get
the exactly. Right. We so, get the crumbs.
If we get anything, we typically get tokenism in that regard. You know, so the upper class bourgeois Negroes sort of get what they need out of it, but right. In terms of the it never seems to trickle down, the benefits never seem to trickle down to, you know, the average brother or sister who is in desperate need right now. And as I explained to you at the beginning of the show, you know, we got people out there on the streets right now. One of the number one crimes right now that's happening in this country that's being underreported is people are actually stealing food out of supermarkets and convenience stores. And that's happening at epidemic levels. It's just not being reported. People are hungry. And, you know, it used to be when you go to the stores, the children would be the ones out there trying to hustle and make a couple dollars to walk you to your car. Well, now it's adults, you know, full grown men out there doing these things. And, you know, it's the economy. For Black people already lived on the fringe edges of the economy in terms of being, you know, in the realms of poverty. But now it's to the point where, you know, you're starting to see what we consider third world conditions in Black neighborhoods right now, especially with all the austerity going on. And none of the policies I saw address that matter. And so, and as Black people, we have to, you know, get to the point where we start. If we're going to participate in this political folly, then we need to be participating with a unified front and holding people accountable. And yeah, I don't see it happening either.
I mean, but see, when you say participate, I know what you mean by participate. But it's more of be the people at the parade on the sidelines waving.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are more satisfied with having a Black face in a position than making sure that our shit is straight.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, check out this example. So I'm scrolling through social media and I see there's a post about Master P calling out Black people for the way Black people been flocking to that, what's the new app, the Clubhouse app.
Mm-hmm.
And so Master P is like, damn, Black folk, we done helped make Clubhouse a $1 billion app.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the comedian Kev on stage and he put a video out and he was kind of refuting that a bit. And he was like, and in his refute of it, he was like, well, I have an app and Black people support it. But I'm like, Kev, you missing it though.
Mm-hmm.
If Black people support your app the way they support Clubhouse, you would be an extra millionaire right now.
You'd be a billionaire.
Right. And that's the thing. Yes, Black people are supporting your app. It's mm-hmm. a great content. I support it. But if Black people supported your app or flocked to your app the same way they do the Clubhouse or any other app, a lot of Black people wouldn't have to worry about money. Economics would not be one of our main issues outside of, well, within our community, especially if we practicing group economics. And I think that's the one thing that he missed in that is, okay, yes, you have support, but you're not getting this Clubhouse money though.
No. Well, that speaks to a defeated mentality that we have for people, unfortunately. And because we have a defeated mentality, we don't think we can win. We don't think we can build it. And actually, we don't think we deserve to actually get those types of rewards. The cognitive dissonance that resides in Black people when you start talking about building power.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it. When you control an aspect of social media, you are generating power.
Yes.
When you start talking about that, you know, for the most part, Black people, you know, as a whole, run away from that. And I challenge anybody to dispute that, you know, because I know there are some people that say, hold on for a second and don't say those things. Listen, I say the things that you don't want to say, but you feel right. It in your comments. And when we start talking about the acquisition of power and things of that nature, first and foremost, you know, we have a genetic memory. that remembers every single time Black people built power in this country, it was destroyed with utter terrorism, ferocity, and and just some of the most violent manners you could think of. You know, you think about Black people creating their own economies with the Black Wall Streets that we had, the boom that we had. You think about Black people who have inventions that are sitting in patent rooms with their names on it, but they still haven't been paid for. You know, they still, their families still have not reaped the benefits from those things. You think about the longtime legacies. I mean, look at the Black lineage to Thomas Jefferson, how those members never really able to receive or recoup any member, any parts of that empire or legacy that was created, you know, even in the horrible way it was created. You know, we just have a terrible way of relenting from even the acquisition of building power. And we got to remember, man, you know, it wasn't too long ago where this same government had authorized hits on people. There's a movie about to come out right now about Fred Hampton, you know, the Black Panther Party. His brother was 21. And people say, they saw the possible power in him, the side energy in him.
Yeah, it's finna unite them Chicago gangs. They weren't having that.
Yeah, but it wasn't just Chicago gangs. It was gangs all across the country, you know, because they all followed that lead. So, but what we have to truly understand is, you know, there are people now who are alive back then who remember how terrified they were to walk outside back then due to the fact that they didn't know whether they would be killed, police officers, law enforcement, or whatever would have been. So we have a long history of what happens to Black people in this particular hemisphere when you start to seek power. And don't think that's lost on people.
We have a short memory and we get lulled to sleep easy. Because I feel like Black people have just fixed it in our mind that a lot of the negative interactions with the police were just under the Trump 4 years. And it's like, well,
you have a selective memory.
Yeah, like, well, a lot of the, like, the ones that really, really, really made people mad were under the Obama administration. And not saying the Obama administration had anything to do with them, but I'm just saying, let's not act like racism started when Trump became president.
Well, it's convenient and it's a cowardly way to assess it, because if you blame it on Trump, then once Trump is out of office, you no longer have a scapegoat, you know, to address it. Because if we start talking about institutional racism and white supremacy and along the tentacles that go way back past Jim Crow, back, you know, antebellum slavery, things of that nature, when you do those things, then it speaks to, well, damn, how many generations are y'all going to let go by and still deal with this carnage and not address it? And not address it in a way where you stop it for future generations to deal with.
Well, and see, that's, to me, that's one of the things we need to analyze with this inauguration and everything like that, because it's we're going to move forward and be friends with no real reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the people that just got elected.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly. So we're going to forgive y'all just because y'all not Trump, or you hung with Obama, or you got some Black in you. We're going to forgive you because of imagery. And it's like, Black people, we got to get out of this moral victory business. Like, think about it, bro. If you was a basketball coach, you a high school basketball coach, and you coached this team for 3 years, and for 3 years, y'all went 0-20, but you had 60 more victories in 3 years. 60 more victories. Y'all ain't win one game in 3 years, but y'all had 60 more victories. You think you're going to make it to a fourth year?
Well, here's the thing. It's funny you make the basketball analogy, because I was just having this conversation with a good brother earlier. When we really look at our attitude, we have the attitude of the Washington Generals.
Yeah.
The Washington Generals. Now, you would think the Harlem Globetrotters would be who we would, you know, emulate, in that particular comparison. But no, the Washington Generals go into the arena every night knowing that they're going to lose.
Right.
Now, they might get close, and that's the moral victory you speak of. but they have no intention of truly winning the game. They get paid to lose.
Right.
They're even getting paid. We just taking dives. And we're not even trying to really, you know, hold people accountable. This whole concept of voting, like I said, I go back to the whole notion that they rammed up right before the election. Voters, if you like, depended on it. And once the election was over, it was like, well, you know, we didn't really expect much from the winners. But what was the difference between the two candidates and so forth? And specifically, when you look at their records, you know, because Joe Biden has a long history of, you know, anti-blackness in his political career. And Kamala Harris has a long history, even though her career is a lot shorter, but she has a history of anti-black policies as a district attorney and an attorney general in that particular in California. So when you assess that, and how can you say that this truly was a victory? And I see that the pageantry and how people are comfortable with this particular election and so forth, and they're more comfortable because, you know, we have to overcome the fear of power. And yeah, that's really what it is, because as long as Donald Trump was in office, it was a pretty simple, you know, choice. Either you choose power or you choose to cower in fear. And you, whatever happened, it was going to be exposed openly for everybody to see. But, no, I'm sorry.
We talk about power so much as if we really have, right? Let social media tell it. Black people, black women are the most educated group in America. Pat's already dealt with that with the statistics. That's more so talking about enrollment numbers. Because mm-hmm. I think we need to stop lying to ourselves too. We need to stop rewriting history for ourselves if we really want to fix our situation and not depend on anybody else to do, but us fix our situation. We got to stop lying to ourselves and running with these lies. Okay, look, our community, like, first of all, stop voting people in just to vote. Right. because when you say, well, I voted them in, but I didn't expect them to do nothing, you're a dumbass. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be voting. So this, you should never vote somebody in just because. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Like, if you told me you're 18 and you did that, I give you a pass. If it's your first time voting and you 18, you got your little 18-year-old brain in your head that ain't fully developed and still full of dumb shit, okay. Okay, whatever. Because I did that when I was 18. But after that, after you look grown, your ass, even though 18, your ass know how to read and comprehend. But after that, your comprehension skills and your reading skills should be better. And you should understand politics better. I don't care if you like it or not. Politics is what controls stuff that happens around you. So you should know your shit. And if you're not on it, and you're just out here voting, because thank PC, you went to college.
I did.
Tell me this, the way especially black folk vote in the real world ain't the same way that they voted for a student government for the most popular. They didn't. Yeah. Nobody. When you vote for student government, you don't care what really happens. You just voting for whoever gave you the most food, or whoever looked the best, or who you were on the smash, or something like that. You don't really care about what really happens because you're not there for that. But we can't bring that same voting attitude into what's going on in the real world. Because think about it, like one thing I noticed with the inauguration is the young lady who did the poem, And it's no slight against her. She didn't do anything wrong. She went out there, she smashed it, she did her job. Congratulations to that young lady, because she looked beautiful and she did a beautiful job. But we gonna let her down. Black America is gonna let her down, because Black America is not even gonna put in the work to make sure that the words of her poem actually become tangible things in our lives. And that's the thing that made me mad about When I saw all the fanfare about the poem, it's like she did what she was supposed to do. She came out there, Michael Jordan, that damn poem. Yes, but black people, we gonna let her down. We are going to let her down because we're already in the mindset of, hey, Trump is out. We can go back to chilling because we got like this mild racism. It ain't spicy no more. It's mild racism. It ain't like turkey sausage, or it ain't beef sausage. It's turkey sausage, or beef racism is turkey racism. Or,
I'm a manifestist, though.
Okay, manifest. I'm sorry. That's what you're doing. I'm sorry. See, I'm talking and I'm messing your manifestation up. I'm sorry.
But and all jokes aside, you know, she's gonna be her whole future. You know, what's really sad about this is, as you know, and I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40 now. We let these children down. We've let generations to come down because we didn't take a stance. We didn't build. We didn't create institutions that would be safeguards for them. We didn't create legacies. We didn't create community that would make it so that their future is guaranteed or protected. We really put them in a place where they're going to have to fend for themselves, and then fend for themselves in a society with fewer resources, fewer access to resources, a more powerfully controlled grid. Now that we're dealing with the techno age, now people are I mean, less jobs available, less jobs afforded. You know, there's been talks now that large metropolitan areas are truly struggling because due to COVID, most people were able to outsource their work or work from home in the suburban areas, specifically cities like Philadelphia, New York, and Chicago, where people are working from home in the suburban areas. They're no longer generating tax dollars for those areas. So all the industries that depended on those tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in places like New York, millions of people coming in and out of those buildings, utilizing the transportation services, food services, all those different mailing services, all those things now are, you know, becoming obsolete because people are actually able to work from home, and it's more efficient for companies to have people work from home, give them a little check for, you know, a little check for their internet usage, and instead of having to pay for these outlandish prices for these these office space. So now you're changing the workspace and the work area. Now it's easier to, you know, so that now those places that you looked at just 2 years ago and saying, there's a potential job on the 15th floor. Now that's not such a guarantee anymore. So now there's even fewer opportunities in the marketplace for young black people who are going to these colleges, who are getting accruing a high amount of debt, and, you know, really don't have a realistic way of paying it off.
Look, man. All right. Well, yeah. I think a lot of people are expecting like the executive orders and a lot of things that are signed or published by Joe Biden to I'm gonna do that a lot during this presidency. He's gonna be Joe Biden a lot, but let me just read the like 17 executive orders. So I'm gonna read the title of all 17. I'm gonna read the title, but like I said, we're not gonna get deep into all 17. We might not even cover all 17, but okay. Because you made me think about that when you're talking, when you're saying just what you're saying, that people are expecting like things to just be rolled out and the things to be changed. But also, you made me, before I read the executive orders, I was watching a podcast earlier today. I think it might have been I Am Athlete or whatever. But I watched several podcasts. I can't remember which one. But they were talking about the concept of people pulling themselves up from the bootstraps. And so, you know, right. And they were trying to refute the idea that some people don't have boots to pull themselves up from. And because, you know, it's the mentality of a lot of people who were able to build wealth on their own. Right. And so they're like, well, because I did it, everybody should be able to do it. And it's like, it's the possibility is there, or the potential to do it could be there, but the reality, everybody's reality isn't the same. Some people, like, there's no boots for the bootstraps to be pulled up from. Like, Black America is hurting more than what a lot of people really believe. And I think a lot of people need to take the time to really look at the real statistics and look at the real facts, look at the real research versus looking at Black America from the social media eye. Because when you're looking at Black America from the social media eye, it looked like everybody owned the business. It looked like everybody's successful. But when you look at statistics, it's like most Black businesses don't even have damn employees. Mm-hmm. I think less than 10% of Black businesses have employees.
There is, and it's funny because, and I'm trying to find it now, but there was an idea that basically spoke to this time coming. And it spoke to the fact that eventually people, due to the rate of technology, there were going to be allowances. And the allowances was based on the fact that most Americans would be paid $2,000 a month to stay home, right?
Right.
And that would be tax-free. They would be paid $2,000 a month to stay home, and that would be what they choose to do as their career, because there was not going to be enough jobs to properly employ the nation's employable aged people. So, and I'm trying to find it because I'm mad that I didn't look it up before the show. But basically,
but what is it?
It's a $2,000 allowance that was estimated, and it's estimated that people would be paid home, be paid to, if you chose to opt out of unemployment and looking for a job, you would be granted $2,000 a month from the federal government as an allowance. Now, and I'm pretty sure somebody watching this will be able to research that, to look that up, because it was something that, you know, about a year and a half ago was a really hot topic going around in a lot of circles when it was talking about the fact that it didn't look, this economy, the American economy didn't look too good, and then people were plotting on an impending crash. So it sounds it's really interesting now that this number of $2,000 is being put on the table now in terms of a stimulus package, because it sounds really, you know, a lot, it sounds a lot like that particular idea that was floated around in regards to, I believe a think tank came up with that number, but I'm not really sure. But it's really interesting that we're dealing with that particular aspect of dealing with that type of reality now, because supposedly nobody knew COVID was going to happen, the coronavirus was going to happen. And supposedly we didn't know that the entire world was shut down for, you know, the better part of 5 months. And then we would have riots in the street. And then 2 months later, people would be more so concerned about buying a PS5 than
I mean, come on, PC. We know these waves of consciousness that comes up, or these waves of attention that come and go. We got to get out of that, because that's like white people really understand how we operate, and they know. These niggas not gonna be mad long. Throw some entertainment out there. Throw something else out there. These niggas not, because it's like, even though I love the fact that the WNBA and the NBA, their players speak up and speak out about what's going on. Like, I do love that. But that in itself is still in the moral victory lane, because they're not supported by anything tangible. Say it again.
There are no changes that's going to occur. We're past the age of awareness. People are pretty damn aware about circumstances concerning our reality. We are right now people who are choosing blissfulness of pretend ignorance, because you can't pretend that 2020 didn't happen. And because you can't pretend that 2020 didn't happen, the blissfulness of it all. I mean, the way that we've gone about selectively memorizing, remembering the tragic outfall of that particular year is scary. You know, there used to be a time as a historian that you would have to say, cite things in history to show how tyranny works. Well, we had a whole, we can say a century's worth of historical events happen in 1 year. And on month 10 of that year, people were not concerned. Black people in particular were not concerned about the things that happened in the previous 10 months. The toilet paper shortages, the food.
They forgot about that.
Yeah, the supermarkets with no food in the aisles. Look, the guy that bought all the damn hand sanitizer in Tennessee.
Look, Pat and I have already had a show about it. We've already talked about it a couple of times on several shows, but the impending water crisis that's coming up.
Yeah.
Like, so we really got to get real about everything. But like I was saying, like, okay, so you got the WNBA, you got the NBA, you got these two leagues and who can speak up and speak out, but it's not backed by anything tangible. It's not backed by anything real. The people, the Black America don't back it like they're supposed to. They're definitely not backed by the owners like it is. So it's good. It's better than nothing, but we still need to get out of the moral victory lane. And once we get out of more victory lane, because that's how Black people celebrated this inauguration. They celebrated it like okay, we just won the Super Bowl for Black people. And it's like, no. We like the practice squad. And
how about football analogy for what you're saying?
Say it again.
I'll give you a football analogy for what you're saying. Say we are offense and we have the ball on the 3-yard line and we go and we run the play. We run a play and we gain 2 yards, right? Where are we at? Well, we will celebrate that 2-yard run as if we're,
touchdown.
Yeah. Problem is the goal line is on the opposite end of the field. So we gain 2 yards. We're celebrating, but we have 95 yards to go.
Yeah, well, yeah, because yes, and I love that because it goes with what, my analogy when I say, because, Black people, we really believe we're playing chess, but Black people are at the chessboard playing Uno with our cards turned backwards.
No, it's funny because somebody brought that analogy up over the weekend. Chess is being played. We're in the audience cheering the chess players on.
But when they let us come down, to the board, we're not even playing that game. We're playing Uno with our cards backwards, and they see all our moves, and we wonder why we keep being found out. Well, it's like, dang, they must be psychic. No, you telling everybody everything you're doing.
Well, they can let us play, but here's how they strap the kit. They say, yeah, you can play on the board, but, all you have is pawns on your team. You don't have any queens, bishops, knights, kings. What king? There's no kings, so you got a table full of pawns and you're moving against a team and all they have is jacks. I mean, the knights, the rooks and the bishops. And so they don't even have pawns on their side. So anytime you kill one of their players or one of their tokens on the board, it's like, yeah, it's a victory, but they got a whole replacement regalia of those same powerful pieces on the board. And sometimes we'll be the pawns killing each other on the board.
Yeah. we're like, I want to say this, then read these executive orders, but if you ever hear NFL players talk about why they can't unite, one of the reasons they talk about why NFL players will never unite like the NBA is because the number of players and the number of differences. And they allow the number of differences to keep them separated.
Oh, that and the fact that they don't have guaranteed contracts. So
at the same time, if you want change, you got to be trill. Somebody got to be trill if we want some change. So,
well, as we talked about in the Independence Day Project, man, we have a price. I mean, and our price is pennies to the dollar. So they know that they can, you know, wave a trinket in front of us. They can wave a contract, a car, this, that, and the other. And the thing is, you know, it's very powerful if you give something to somebody and there's a perceived threat that if they act on something, it can be taken away. And they've shown that they will do that. And, right. You know, it's like the child playing with fire. They only got to get burned once. And somebody watching that will say, I'm not messing with fire.
You know? Look, right. All right. Let me read these executive orders. All right. So it's 17 of them. And so we have a sustainable public health supply chain. That's EO 14001. EO 14000 is supporting the reopening and continuing operation of schools and early childhood education providers. A lot of these got to do with COVID. EO 13999 is protecting work health and worker health and safety. EO 13998 is promoting COVID-19 safety in domestic and international travel. EO 13997, improving and expanding access to care and treatments for COVID-19. EO 13996, establishing the COVID-19 pandemic testing board and ensuring a sustainable public health workforce for COVID-19 and other biological threats. EO 13995, ensuring an equitable pandemic response and recovery. EO 13994, ensuring a data-driven response to COVID-19 and future high consequence public health threats.
Off all the black ones.
Huh?
I said, that's right. Read off all the black ones.
Exactly. Only thing in black is the EO. So the EO 13993, revision of civil immigration enforcement policies and priorities. That's what you were hitting on. That's what you're hitting on when you're talking about the country getting browner. America is working on that. But Biden had already said in recent days that immigration is at the top of his list. Mm-hmm. So EO 13992, revocation of certain executive orders concerning federal regulation. EO 13991, protecting the federal workforce and requiring mask wearing. EO 13990, protecting public health and environment and restoring science to tackle the climate crisis. EO 13989, ethics commitments by executive branch personnel. EO 13988, preventing and combating discrimination on the basis of gender, identity, or sexual orientation. We're going to come back to that one. EO 13987, organizing and mobilizing the United States government to provide a unified and effective response to combat COVID-19 and to provide United States leadership on global health and security. So they're trying to put back that pandemic relief board or that pandemic prevention board. So EO 13986, ensuring a lawful and accurate enumeration and appointment pursuant to this.
I'm sorry. I'm just lighting the candle for all the stuff that, you know, distribute to us.
Yeah. Decennial accents, whatever, some senses. I'm messing up on that word. And the last one is EO 13985, advancing racial equality and support for underserved communities. Oh, there go the black one through the federal government. There you go, the black one for underserved communities.
Maybe people of color. I read that one. You know, hey. I think the biggest winners are the transgender. They get to go both ways in sports.
Well, okay, so that's why I want to talk about that, because I was reading into this, and this one is I saw a lot of social media buzz and a lot of the articles and things. That's exactly what they was hitting at as far as opening doors for trans women to be able to compete. But I did read some things, and I haven't read this whole order. I haven't read this whole order, but the little that I read, it was more so talking about you can't discriminate against sex, but I didn't see anything specific that was pushing for the idea of the trans women to be able to compete in sports, even though, of course, you know, I am against trans women competing against biological women. I am against that. So I am interested to see how this is used, because I'm not discounting anything. I'm not saying anybody's wrong or right, but I'm just sitting back and seeing what happens, because seeing the language that I have seen in this thus far, but also seeing the articles that have been put out against it. So, because what I read, like this part saying discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation manifests differently for different individuals, and it often overlaps with other forms of prohibited discrimination, including discrimination on the basis of race or disability. For example, transgender Black Americans face unconscionably high levels of workplace discrimination, homelessness, and violence, including fatal violence. So that's one of the things that I did saw that was used by some of those people who wrote the articles, but I didn't see any specifics in there as of yet, but I do need to read it again. But I am interested to see how that is used to maybe try to push the idea of trans women being able to compete with biological women, which again, I am against.
Well, what you need is Pat sitting here, not me. Pat can elaborate on the fine print of these particular executive orders, because we know Pat will read the fine print.
Yeah.
But what I say is, when you hear the capsules of these executive orders as they're written in articles, one of the things you have to also always understand is the vagary, the vagueness of the language is just because to create that gray area. I never truly trust anything a politician says or does, even when they write it, because they always seem to find a way to manipulate, change the rules, or find some type of loophole somewhere, some way. In regards to the executive orders that were passed, that were signed thus far, like I said, Black people will benefit by proxy. In other words, the COVID relief for unemployment benefits, Black people will benefit by proxy. The federal employees, we know a lot of Black people, specifically Black people in the middle class, have federal employee type jobs. They will benefit by proxy. But nothing in these particular executive orders leaves me with the confidence that Black people will specifically receive any policy. As you mentioned, right, the policy that was mentioned to improve or protect the rights and sovereignty, not just sovereignty, but the health of transgender, LGBTQ, and things of that nature. I did see that in some of the executive orders. There was a push to stop the financial, to stop financial, to withdraw funds from building the wall.
that never happened.
Yeah, that not one brick has been applied, but but it spoke specifically to the fact that there's like 10 million illegal aliens in this country that's going to be given granted rights on an opportunity for citizenship. You know, it's like when you can speak to different groups other than Black people, this specific groups get specific benefits and it's entitled in this in their name. When you start saying for Black people, what do we get specifically? You know, and then we can even go back to the Obama administration with the Health Care Act and the Free Health Care Act. Where people think, well, that was for Black people, yeah, by proxy.
But no, that was for everybody.
Exactly. The people who were most affected by that were, Black people did benefit, but you also
everybody benefited. Everybody who were able to use, but you know what? Not to cut you off, but just say this real quick. I think a lot of people believe that it was a specific Black people thing because of what they saw via proximity. So I'm around a lot of Black people. I see a lot of Black people with these Obama phones and all these benefits from that. So that had to be specific for Black people, not realizing it's proximity.
Yeah, proximity. You go to West Virginia where there's barely any Black people in these coal miner towns, and the majority of them benefited from Obamacare because they had Black lung condition, had to have medical treatment, things of that nature. So if you know, when you have policies strictly for Black people, that's a different story. But we've seen in the past that these particular politicians, specifically the Democratic Party, goes out of their way to only give symbolic victories and sentimental gifts to Black people and allow for low-level tokenism to take place, where they do favors for people who provide cover and who become gatekeepers, you know, to make sure that there's no progress for Black people. And you know, this is typical Boulay behavior. But You know, the bad part about surviving slavery is that we survived it. And I say that because you have to have strength to endure and survive, but you also have to have a willingness to fight to the death. And there are a lot of other groups of people who are literally able to fight and win. We don't talk about it, but, you know, when we start talking about a liberation and people who are willing to fight, you can always go back to the Haitian Revolution. That was our victory. And it wasn't even called the Haitian Revolution, which is the irony. It was called the Pan-African Revolution. But, you know, it's been changed in title to make it more to localize it and not let people see, have a real true historic understanding of what took place on that island back in from 1791 to 1804. So, you know, we have to observe this whole idea of our relationship with power and re-examine it. And the fear that we have with taking it for our own. We have to get out of being comfortable being in a nanny state where somebody is always going to take care of our utilities. Somebody is always going to be provide the power grid. Somebody's always going to drop off shipments of food and things of that nature. We have to get comfortable with being people who can provide that for ourselves. Until then, we'll just have to be on the end. There's no proverbial seat at the table for Black people. As Dr. King said, you know, Black people were being... He moved Black people into a burning house. Now, of course, he said Black people should be the extinguisher. No, but Black people should understand that the table
shouldn't go in there.
Right.
Don't go in the house. But it goes along the idea of we have to have a seat at the table. Well, why? Why we can't build our own table?
Well, you know, the idea of representation also speaks to that. Because if you have representation, the representation has not done anything to improve the lives of the masses of Black people.
I'm just saying, we've had representation since Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. We've had representation since Reconstruction, and the overall quality of Black life in America has not improved. Maybe individual. And I'm also tired of people acting like what Obama becoming president, Kamala Harris becoming vice president is the... It's the dream of Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King wasn't talking, and we're going to use that. He wasn't talking about two people. He wasn't talking about a handful of people. He was talking about all of us. So if all of us aren't good, then the dream isn't realized. Stop messing the man message. Stop minimalizing the message and messing it up and distorting it to make yourself feel good or to get you some likes on social media or whatever little newscast you put out. Because first of all, if you're going to tell the man message, tell the whole message, but stop acting like, okay, Obama becoming president. Okay. One family, but you know how many Black Americans were doing bad those 8 years? They realized that.
Yeah. Well,
And let me just say this, not saying it's Obama's fault. I'm not saying it's Obama's fault directly that Black America was doing bad. But what we are saying is just because a Black person is in those positions doesn't mean Black people going to be good as a whole.
No, in fact, typically means the opposite, because typically Black people are put in those positions to be scapegoats. And we have to start recognizing that. That's why I tried to warn sisters about Black Girl Magic and buying into it. Now, what you see on this, Black women have become scapegoats in a lot of different political circles and the propaganda circles in terms of, in terms of how they're perceived. And also, you know, if this vaccine doesn't work, and there's been some sparse reports, you know, won't get into near there, but there's been some sparse reports about the vaccination process. Well, if it doesn't work, if people have a negative reaction to it, if people are more so, they're damaged. If, because we don't want anybody striking this, but then the people are going to point back to, it's the same thing as if with the Tuskegee experiment. Nobody truly talks about the national and the federal government and their complicity in that. What they really speak to is the sister that was the nurse and how she was complicit. And she's the one who people think about when we start talking about how terrible the Tuskegee experiment was. Well, that's similar to what's going to, you know, to if things play out a certain way here. We have to be very careful when Black people are put in these so-called positions of power, because they're typically put in those positions of power so they can be pushed out in front as damage control when something inevitably goes wrong.
But look, even like that with the Tuskegee, people don't even got the right information about the Tuskegee experiment. So, but like you're saying, that the sister or any Black person involved in the Tuskegee experiment wouldn't have been involved if the actual
planet stage.
Right, the government and the resources wasn't there, so they didn't come up with that shit. But were they complicit with it? Yeah, they get stones thrown at them too, but they didn't create the fucking opportunity for that to happen.
They become the face.
Right. But see, once again, Black folk got to stop trying to so badly have a seat at the table, so badly try to fit in with white America, so badly try to appeal to the sensibility of white America, like trying to make them love us, trying to make them like, no, Black America, we can have our own Black. We can have our own space and exist within our own. We don't need them. We don't need to fit in. We don't need, but like, I don't get it, man, but we need to get out of that space. Yes, it's a new regime, man, but how much change is really going to happen? Like, how much progress for Black folk is really going to happen? Are we really safer? Are we really safer?
You really have to think about that whole concept of Black people making progress in a system that was designed to maintain Black people as a bottom class, bottom feeder people.
Exactly.
This country is written into its constitution, is written into the Declaration of Independence, is written into the Bill of Rights, that who this country was for, the power grab, who it was for. And in those particular laws, you also had laws that stipulated that there will be glass ceilings put in place, that Black people will never ascend as a whole, as long as they work within the system, to a place of power and to a place to be recognized as an authority within the system. Those things have all been put in place. So we have to understand that there's always going to be limitations and limits to what we can do and build, as long as we try to navigate through this system. What Dr. Amos Wilson would always say is, you know, before, you know, we defeat the white man, we have to defeat the white man up here.
Yeah. You know,
and then we have to defeat the nigga the white man created. And that part is the hardest part, because, you know, that nigga is like, he's
niggatry, man. Niggatry. That's a culture.
Yeah, you know, and it's truly, you know, you can be as articulate as you want. You can wear three-piece suits. You can wear the highest
client. Still a nigga. Had to tell you.
Yes, right. And your mindset has to be that of understanding those things. And if you're not understanding the sophistication of white supremacy, what it means, what it does, is Dr. Elder Neely Fuller.
Neely Fuller Jr.
You know, everything else, sir, you understand about the system will serve to confuse you. And we're just a bunch of confused people. And because we're not based or grounded in an African-centered or even just a Black-centered culture that features us, you know, working Black first and being codified in our actions, because we don't work and function from that, we just seem to fall in line wherever.
Right. I mean, but once again, I'm going to reiterate, it has to be deeper for us. It has to be deeper than representation. It has to be deeper than that. It has to be deeper than, oh my God, I can see somebody who looks like me in this space. Well, you know what? You can see a lot more people who look like you in high places if we built our own shit. If we concentrated on our own selves. It's kind of like when the mindset people had when the Meghan Markle girl married the white boy with the red hair over in England, whatever. Prince Harry, Henry, Kendrick, whatever the fuck his name is. So, you know, Black people were like, oh, now I can tell my Black daughter she could be a princess.
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me this is the first Black, you mean to tell me this is the only woman with Black in her that's in a position of royalty in the world right now? You mean to tell me this is the first time in history that somebody who got Black roots, a Black woman, was in a position of royalty? Bullshit. It's Black women in positions of royalty all over the world. Black people are just so fucking lazy that we're not going to go look until white people give it to us in the form of a fucking Marvel movie called Black Panther.
Well, the irony is, even when we do find Black royalty, unfortunately, until we kill the nigga in our mind, you know, European royalty is the only royalty that counts.
Right.
You know, that's the measuring stick. And you know, listen, I always say to Black folk, don't worry. You know, if you don't want me to tell you who you are, they'll show you who you are as soon as you get out of place and step out of line. And that has happened so many times that, you know, eventually, you know, it's going to get to a point where people aren't going to have a choice but to accept their reality. But I just hope that by the time they accept their reality, we still have enough energy and power and strength in us to, you know, to eradicate sickness. That is the system of white supremacy and impending damage is done on us as Black people. But one of the things that you always have to keep in mind, and somebody brought this up, you know, we talk about being liberators for Black people, but we have to truly start asking ourselves, are Black people even interested in being liberated? And once you truly come to the conclusion that the majority of Black people are perfectly comfortable on the plantation, you got to do like Harriet. Take who's ready.
It hasn't, look, shit ain't changed America. Like you said, because like you're saying, I love when you're saying we got to kill the nigga up here. I keep telling people, niggers were created for a reason. Mm-hmm. A nigga is a self-defeating individual. Mm-hmm. A nigga will burn everything down with himself in there just because, and they're working on the behalf of white supremacy, whether consciously or unconsciously. And niggas come in all shapes, sizes, forms of fashions and economic classes and all that. So just because I speak well and I have a nice job in the government or whatever, that I can still be a nigga. I could be walking down the street with golds in my mouth, smelling like Bonk and Hennessy. I could be a nigga. I could be a professor at a university and be a nigga. Like, I could be a CEO of a company. Instead, it's the mindset of, I will make sure white supremacy always has the advantage. I will make sure that I keep my people in a docile, subservient position. Think about it. When Black people get riled up, they always send out preachers.
Well, that speaks to Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Oh, they need to get that shit together, too.
People will look at Uncle Tom's Cabin and say, Uncle Tom wasn't the nigga Sambo was. And I say, no, they both were niggas. You just had a benevolent version and a malevolent version of niggas. But they both worked and served the master of the plantation, you know. And so that's typically like when you talk about Republicans and Democrats. Well, neither one of them are friends of the Black community. In fact, 150 years ago, you just switched the text, you switch them. And the Republicans were liberal and the Democrats were, you know, the conservatives, you know. So, you know, when you start really looking at, I'm sorry, I thought this stuff popping up on my screen. When you have, when you start really analyzing what's happening, it's basically a muddled chaos and confusion, controlled chaos and confusion. Put in place, things are moving so fast in the world right now that it's hard for anybody to get a grasp of it. So most people just choose to resort to recreation or some sort of respite activity where they can sort of escape reality. And that's what you're starting to see, is more people trying to find ways to escape reality, vacations, reality TV, get involved in, like you said, the entertainment earlier. And then, you know, we're basically children when it comes to politics. Children who function off emotionalism. If I'm louder than you, I'm right. Reasoning and being able to have an efficient way to communicate and just to actually make sound decisions based on the information at hand. We don't care about whether something's wrong. We don't care about the truth. We'd rather just win the argument. And because we have so many people who have been programmed to move and operate and function like that, we've created a dichotomy of thought to which is going to be extreme one way or the other. Either you're with us or you're against us. And we find ways to isolate and ostracize those who doubt, who do not drink the Kool-Aid, you know. So this whole idea of peer pressure, you would think it's a child's game, peer pressure, because we learned about it in adolescence. But no, peer pressure is something that's utilized in bully tactics and behavior, or something that's utilized even today. And for those who are gatekeepers, I can recall a brother inviting me to a Republican campaign here in Philadelphia, for which Republicans were soliciting Black people in North Philly for funds to help them run against the Democrats. And there was a Black woman who was their gatekeeper. And when I started asking them questions and challenging them about what they would do for the community, she tried her damnedest to shut me up. And then would try to come to me, grab my attention and things of that nature. But at that particular time, I had lost all respect for her because how dare you be a gatekeeper for these white folk in my neighborhood when, you know, they're not coming here to bring anything to us. In fact, they're coming here to ask the poorest people in the
city. They just want your vote. That's it.
Oh, no, they wanted money for the campaign. They were there asking for money, and they were really resolute about that. So, you know, I just looked at, you know, I look at that, and I look at anybody that pacifies that or tries to, who tries to pass that off as their place as being, if anything, less than a sellout to our community. And you look at the majority of people we're talking about, the majority of people, they're sellouts. They've sold the entire future of the Black community down a road, down a river, and our children are going to have to pay for the sins of their parents. And unfortunately, you know, this is going to be the generational curse. And these hard times right now, that we're dealing with, they're only going to get worse for Black people. And we truly have to understand that. You look in your neighborhoods, they're not places. Our neighborhoods are actually, if you ever visited a plantation, our neighborhoods full of row homes and townhomes and poor neighborhoods and projects. They
set up like
just like the houses, the cabins on the plantation, you know. So, you know, the plantation now is up here. And as soon as anytime we're ready, we can be free.
Look, a great book to follow that up, a great book to read to help break the plantation mind of that nigga mindset is Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. Great book. Check it out. It's a short read. It ain't an extensive, long book, but it's powerful. It got a lot of information. Once again, Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. So check that out. Yeah, man. Just want we had to get that. We had to get that shit off our chest real quick, man. Because it's right, the inauguration happened. 17 executive orders going in. Black people had already. Black people, we can't get comfortable. So we put like this. We're talking to everybody. So those who understand what's going on, those who get it, and those who are on the same page as us, as we got to do for self. Let's connect for real and do for self for real. All others, hey man, I don't know what to tell you. Get down or stay down. Basically, that's how it is. I ain't gonna say get down and lay down. We ain't on that. We ain't trying to make nobody come with us, but either get down with us or stay down with them.
That's exactly.
Right. So you got any parting shots before we close this thing out? Hey, and tell people how they can contact you again as well.
Well, shameless plug, man. They can always grab a copy.
Oh, yeah.
If they want to learn the intricate plans of how to build Black power, you know, we took it out of the book and we put it on the screen, on the wire screen. So you can all come out and get a chance. Go to blackindependence.org. Or just, you know, find me on Facebook and hit me up in Messenger and we'll find a way to make it happen. Fortunately for the whole world, I'm the only Professor Carl Tone Jones on the planet.
Free and white supremacy look like? it looks like a bunch of people who are no longer colonized.
That to me would mean that for us, by us wouldn't just be a slogan or a catchphrase. It would be the actual way that we lived. It would be normal for us.
I'm talking about if Black people are hungry, Black people feed them. If Black people are sick, Black people heal them. If Black people need jobs, Black people hire them. If black neighborhoods need policing, then black neighborhoods are the protection.
And require that things that we see on TV, things that we hear on the radio, really reflect who we are as a people.
Our entertainment will reinforce positive images, ideas, messages, and stereotypes of African people.
The area is independence of information, education, and learning.
Economics can't be an individual sport anymore, where we practice rugged individualism. We have to start talking about collectivism and aggregation of our resources.
You're the manufacturer of your own goods. The owners mean you have the rights. No one can come and just take your rights. You have inalienable rights.
You got to promote economics. If there's a bake sale going on in the public school, the youth should be controlling and handling the money. We have to teach them how not to be the consumer all the time and be the producer.
Our food is there because we put it there. Our children learn what we prescribe for them to learn. The wage system that we construct, the economic system we construct, comes out of our own vision.
When we find ourselves in a place where we desire to be accountable for everything black people need, that's how we begin to create those types of things.
Without culture, you have nothing. You know, culture is your folkways, your mores, your values, your principles, your ideas.
By living out this code, this new culture, their decisions would help protect their civilization against white domination. It would help to fight against white supremacy.
We are the infrastructure of this so-called society or nation that we want to build.
Did we allow them to segregate us? Did we allow them to lynch us? While all the time we're looking for somebody to allow us to do something, what's in your best interest, you just got to do it and don't care about whatever repercussions it is. Will it start some issues and will some folks shed some blood and lose some lives over it? Yeah, but freedom ain't free.
Learn your culture, learn your culture, learn your culture, learn your history, learn your path, learn your ancestral lineage. Learn your spiritual past. Learn it. Because if we don't, we are doing our future generations a great disservice.
We've marched a lot. We've protested a lot. We've joined in the ranks trying to reform a lot. And we still see that our power has not been given over to us. This country, just like Britain, didn't do it them. They didn't just release the power. Sometimes you have to take your power.
Trying to find out history, man. Y'all better holler at my brother Joe. He has the On the Shoulders of Giants series that y'all need to get with. 3 volumes.
It's look, volume one, like Funkmaster Flex, volume one, volume two.
Here we go.
Volume three. Oh, I'm about to start on volume four. I just got a lot of stuff going on, man. Great.
Yeah. We got this is gonna be a year, you know, find who we are. I mean, 2020 was clear vision, and I think it provided a vision. Some of us were uncomfortable with the vision, but it provided a vision.
Open my eyes up.
It's 2021. Now is going to be that place where we, you know, where the revelation takes place, you know, the reality. Yeah. And if you haven't been able ready to accept it, then, you know, I hate to see you, because you want to get, there's going to be a devastating reality check.
Right.
2020 was crazy. 2021,
it's only gonna get worse if we don't get our stuff together.
I say.
Hey man, y'all also can check out my online course. I got my module, my first module for my online course, Freedom Fighters of the African Diasporas. I cover 18 the stories of eight and information of 18 freedom fighters for y'all. I did that for y'all. 18 freedom fighters. Go to the website. It's a good price. It's a fair price on the web, on the online course, but I understand my value, so it's valued like it's supposed to be, but it ain't nothing that's going to break you over your head, but it's a good price, and it's worth all the information, because I put a lot of information in there, so y'all check that out. Website.
Say your website. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, www.ontheshouldersone.com. www.ontheshouldersone.com is the website that y'all can check me out, or www.ontheshoulders.org.
So let me speak to that for a second, because you just said something that's really important. There was a book that was written in the 60s by, I forget the man's name, it was Carol something, but the book was the written history of the Illuminati. And that's not the title of the book, but it was the written history of the Illuminati. And Carol Quigley, he was Bill Clinton's mentor. And the price for that book was like $300. The reason why the book was that expensive is because when you have something of value, you want to make sure only certain people have access to it. So when people, when you talk about the price of your course, the price of your course is written at that price because there's value to it. And
yeah.
Really recognize and understand that you can't talk about wanting freedom or liberation, even just being treated as a freaking human being, if you're not interested in liberation for Black people. And if you're going to buy a purse or a bag that's $500 to $2,000 and things like that, you're going to buy purses and bags, then you definitely can afford to educate yourself. So I implore all of you to go out and grab that course.
Please do. Hey, I'm telling you, a lot of good information in that, man. So that's how we do it. Hey, look, we're getting closer and closer to Professor bringing back his podcast, That's all it is. It's just all part of our bigger plan to bring back the whole podcast. Pat ain't really trying on condoms. He ain't really doing that. He just faking it so PC could come on in here. But I definitely do appreciate y'all, because he wasn't feeling too good today. So I appreciate y'all. I know it's kind of last minute, but appreciate you being able to stand in and help out.
Not a problem, good brother. And no, it's not COVID-related, family. It's not COVID-related.
Right, yeah. Nah, he ain't got that Rona. He good. trust me, we don't leave the house. Right. So that being said, he's Professor Carl Tone Jones. Make sure y'all check him out. Support the brother. I am Joseph Ward. Shout out to Patrick. Shout out to Shelby and Candace. Shout out to Cliff. Shout out to Enigma, the whole network. And man, we come with new material. Me and Pat are coming with new material. We was going to have some new stuff today, but, got through up. But we got new material that we're coming up, because we want to expand. We're going to expand outside of podcasts. This is a media network. Media designed to free your mind. That's our slogan for the Freedom Train. Media designed to free your mind. So we got some new stuff coming. We got some content coming. Y'all about to see new sides of my personality and all of our personalities and everything. So that being said, two fangs in the air like a player, because we is up out of here. Yeah.